Well, this is the hour we will take your phone calls with Jeffrey Smith as we talk about GMOs. Next hour, David Cerita joins us as we talk about solar UFOs. That's right, solar UFOs. But we'll be back with Jeffrey and your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with Jeffrey Smith. And Jeffrey, before we take calls, finish your mosquito story.
This is an interesting one. I went down to the Florida Mosquito Control Board in Key West to testify. They gave me 3 minutes. And also on hand was the Oxitec company's scientist. And when I was talking to him on the sidelines, I said, you know, you've released the mosquitoes in 3 countries. Have you tested the saliva of the mosquitoes? Because obviously when the mosquito bites a person, the saliva mixes with the blood of the human. And he said, well, you know, we're actually now looking to see if the gene that was inserted into the mosquito produces a protein in the saliva. And I'm thinking, now you're looking at it. After it's bitten, thousands of people, you've released millions of them. And then I explained to him something he didn't know. And I said, do you know when they inserted a gene into a human cell, they were surprised to find out that the entire genome of the human cell completely reacted. Up to 5% of the genes in the cell changed their levels of expression. Some were switched on, some were shut off, some had much higher levels of protein, some had much lower levels. I said, wouldn't it be smart to test the entire components and compounds inside the saliva of the mosquito, given that you're doing such collateral damage to the genome? And he said, good idea. So this is the level of incompetence, unfortunately, in the companies that are actually changing the gene pool of all future generations, because you can't recall these self-propagating contamination of the gene pool.
Is there an island of Dr. Moreau here, Jeffrey, where something's going to go awry and some kind of mutation, something horrible is going to happen?
Well, you know, we may already have it.
Oh, boy.
When we were at the China conference, it was amazing to see not only was there theoretical understanding of what might go wrong with GMOs, there was studies of animals that showed that it went wrong with the animals. Then there was farmers and veterinarians that saying the same thing is happening on the farm. Then there was testimonials from humans that we picked up. And then there were these charts showing epidemiological evidence. And I've seen these and I present them, produced by Nancy Swanson, a physicist, showing, for example, deaths from senile dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, obesity, and others up, paralleling the increase in use of GMOs and Roundup. Autism, diabetes, hypertension, all sorts of cancers and all sorts of gastrointestinal problems up dramatically, again, related to the use of GM crops in the United States, soy and corn, and the use of Roundup. So we may already be facing huge epidemics. Now, when you look at the evidence, now there's no post-marketing surveillance, there's no human clinical trials, no one is looking at it from the standpoint from the U.S. government or other governments. But when you look at the repeating patterns in the lab animals, in livestock, in humans, in pets, and then you see the escalating trends in the United States that have been using GMOs, it makes an excellent case to suggest that the island of Dr. Moreau is already upon us, and that many of the things affecting children in particular are traced back to GMOs and Roundup.
Here's the problem, too, Jeffrey. We may never be able to go back. Once this has happened, you've opened up the floodgates, haven't you?
Well, you can go back to some extent. For example, if you stopped producing new genetically modified corn seed, then the contamination would be less and less over time. Back in the year 2000, an unapproved variety called Starlink was actually discovered in the human food supply. I actually worked at the laboratory that discovered it. It was found in 22% of the samples tested by the USDA. It was a billion-dollar problem. 3 years later, after massive cleanup efforts, it was still found in USDA samples, but only in 1.8%, demonstrating that although it persists, it reduces in its concentration.
To the phones now we go. Let's go to Ed in Manitoba. There you go, Ed. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Sure thing.
Have I got you, George?
Yep, you sure do.
Yeah, George, it's Ed Rempel calling from Manitoba Canola Growers Association out here in Canada. By the way, I'd like to say I had the opportunity to meet you in Las Vegas a few years ago at the Crash Retrieval Conference.
Okay, that's right.
And that was pretty cool. I would like all of your listeners to know that when we spoke about canola oil and in canola, when we squeeze any seed for oil, like corn,
mm-hmm.
or soybeans or canola, all of the GM stays with the meal and not the oil. So I don't want your listeners to you know, be concerned about that. We genetically modify the proteins. All the proteins stay with the meal, and so that's very important. Jeffrey? I'm right on that.
Well, here's the situation. The two main concerns are the two of the main concerns about GMOs are the genes themselves, because we now know that they can transfer to the DNA of bacteria living inside our intestines. There's hardly any or no genes in the canola. The other are the proteins that are produced by the inserted genes. And again, there's hardly any or no proteins. But there's something else that still means that the canola oil has greater risk if it's genetically engineered than it's not. There's two things. One is that the canola is genetically engineered to be herbicide tolerant, and the most popular one is Roundup Ready. They did a study with soybeans this year, or within the last year anyway, and found that the Roundup Ready produced soybean oil has high concentrations of Roundup residues, particularly the glyphosate, the active ingredient, but not so with the conventional soybeans that had not been sprayed with Roundup or organic soybean oil. So the first concern is the canola that's from genetically engineered canola will have higher concentrations of parts of that herbicide sprayed on the plant. The second is, we talked about earlier that when they inserted a gene into human cells, there was all sorts of massive collateral damage, changes in the way genes express. In canola, when you insert the genes into the canola plant, you can change a whole variety of other things. And you may end up creating a fat-soluble toxin that ends up in the oil. And so it's not checked for. When you look at the Health Canada website, they completely repeat what you just said, saying because there's no genes and there's no protein, it's absolutely safe. But they ignore evidence showing that the process of genetic engineering can change the composition and end up creating things in the oil. And if you look at the applications of canola for Australian regulators, they did in fact find higher levels of a toxin in the oil that was genetically engineered for that particular variety. So even though, yes, there's no protein and yes, there's no genes, we can't let genetically engineered canola off the hook completely, because you end up with the residues of herbicide and who knows what because of the unpredicted side effects.
What about our pets, Jeffrey? What about GMO foods in our cat and dog foods?
I actually went to a veterinarian's office and interviewed her and many of her clients who brought in their dogs, who were encouraged by the veterinarian to take the dogs off of genetically engineered pet food. And the results were unbelievably exciting, because we heard over and over again that intractable diarrhea, itching, fur problems, low energy, irritable behavior were predictably reversed in a non-GMO diet. In fact, I went to a pet food store where they had realized this, and the people who were in charge of the store, who owned the store, actually were brought to tears during the video interview because they were so upset about what was happening with these animals. One woman said, who runs the store, that she felt so terrible when her customers would leave with dog food or cat food that contained genetically engineered food, knowing what it did for these animals. And so I've actually interviewed four veterinarians, including one that writes the Animal Doctor syndicated column to 25 to 30 million readers. And this man, Dr. Michael Fox, said to me that when GMOs were introduced in the late 90s, he got scores of letters from pet owners saying their dogs or cats were suffering from in these inflammatory bowel or itching and allergies. He said, take them off of GMOs, and he had a file drawer full of letters saying that worked. So we're trying to get pet owners to remove, to change to the non-GMO pet food, and I speak to them all the time, and the results are great.
We're going to do Nikiski, Alaska now. Steve's with us west of the Rockies. Steven, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that you know, a lot of the GMOs that are being created now are aluminum resistant. A lot of the seeds that are making they're making are aluminum resistant seeds, and I think that the connection is that a lot of the geoengineering or climate engineering programs that are going on worldwide, it's a necessity now to have these seeds be resistant to freeform aluminum. I wanted to see what Jeffrey's take was on that, and I also wanted to mention a .org site, if I could,
sure,
that people could learn more about this.
Go ahead.
It's geoengineeringwatch.org, and you can learn all about geoengineering, climate engineering programs, and I really believe that, that there's a big connection here, and I'd like people to take a look at that.
Okay, what do you
what
think
do you
about
think
that?
About that, Jeffrey?
You know, I saw the film, What in the World Are They Spraying?, and then the sequel, Why in the World Are They Spraying?, and that's when I was first introduced to the concept that Monsanto has patents on aluminum-resistant crops, and according to the films, the geoengineering increases the level of aluminum in the soil. I don't believe that there's any aluminum-resistant crops that are currently commercialized. If they are, it's a hidden trait, because it's not listed by the USDA, and it's not listed as one of the benefits of these crops. Now, I don't necessarily put the two together simply because they have aluminum resistance crops that is necessarily related to the geoengineering. I have no data to support or deny that. We do know that Monsanto has these massive computers and massive sequencers and testers in their facilities in St. Louis, where they're constantly looking for traits to patent. They're basically trying to take over the patent of as many things as possible, and so they're testing all of these genes for their different traits. And so they may have found aluminum-resistant and mercury-resistant, et cetera, and just patented everything they could. Now, this means a number of things. It means that, first of all, they're going to be taking ownership of things that were formerly owned by the commons, by all of us. And second, once they have a patent, it expires in 20 years or so, and so they're going to be trying to commercialize it within those time frame. And that's one of the big problems about genetic engineering. It's possible that we can create GMOs that would benefit predictably and safely health and the environment, but we are nowhere near that level of understanding of the science. But the patents were going to expire, so they rushed these things on the market long before the science was ready, endangering all who eat, endangering the ecosystem, all living beings and all future generations, in order to fulfill those patents.
Let's go to Bloomington, Illinois. Linda's with us now on Coast to Coast. Linda, good evening.
Hey, George.
Hi.
First of all, I'd like to, didn't get a chance to, but I did pray, and I'm so sorry you lost your sister.
Oh, thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yep. Go ahead, hon.
Okay. And second of all, I want to know, there's a couple things I want to know. If you plant your own garden at home and it doesn't have any of the Roundup or anything on it, the seeds that you buy to plant your own garden, is that problematic? And then the third thing is, does this affect the GMO, or does it affect your diabetes? Because I have two friends that are severely diabetic, and one is diabetic with Crohn's, and she just had surgery, and they found holes in her colon.
Wow.
And the third thing is can I talk to Tommy again when we're done?
Okay. I'll put you on hold when we're finished. Go ahead, Jeffrey. First of all, diabetes and GMOs.
Okay, diabetes. Yes, there is a relationship, and it's a number of things, actually. First of all, I've heard many people in the audiences say that their diabetes levels improved when they switched to non-GMO diets. But we also have some evidence from the research on Roundup and also research on animals. They found that when they fed genetically engineered crops to certain animals, they changed the genetic expression of the genes that regulate insulin. And so that's one red flag. It's a little bit too vague to say that there's causation, of course, but it's a red flag. Second, Roundup or its active ingredient glyphosate, blocks the production of a hormone, of an amino acid in the gut called L-tryptophan. It's produced primarily by our own gut bacteria. L-tryptophan is needed to produce serotonin, and serotonin is used in regulating and producing insulin. So if there's a problem with the production of tryptophan, which could occur by consuming Roundup, then you may interfere with serotonin, which could possibly interfere with the insulin regulation. There's other reasons why insulin may be a problem. There's changes that occur at the level of the cell, according to a research paper by a couple of scientists, and I interview one of them, Dr. Stephanie Seneff. And if you go to YouTube and just put Smith Seneff, S-E-N-E-F-F, you'll see the hour-long talk that has over 100,000 views, and diabetes is brought up. And if you look at the chart of diabetes in the United States and you track it along with the introduction of GMOs or the use of Roundup, it's very, very tightly correlated. That's a correlation. It doesn't prove causation, but I could say there's a lot of red flags that suggest that there is. The second question, or the first question you had, Linda, was about your garden. Now, the good news is that there's hardly any seeds you need to worry about. There are three. There's zucchini, yellow squash, and corn. Those are the three seeds that may be genetically engineered, and you need to find out from your seed producer if they are. If you happen to be in Hawaii, then you should also be concerned about papaya. But other crops than that are not basically the ones that you're going to put in your garden. You're not going to grow soybeans or cotton or canola or sugar beets. Sugar beets are not normal beets. They're just used for sugar.
Okay, thanks a lot, Linda. We'll have Tom pick up the phone now and chat with you. Let's go to Jeff in Canada on the international line. Jeffrey, go ahead.
Oh, thank you very much. You know, when you were talking about the windborne aspect of the GM or the Roundup Ready, I kept on thinking about Percy Schmeiser, the farmer up in Saskatchewan, who basically was bankrupt by Monsanto because they put the onus on him to prove that he was not using their seed. Because what they had done is that they actually had agents go in and take samples from his field.
And the wind blew the seeds onto his field, didn't it?
Well, that's exactly what happened. He hadn't purchased their seeds for four years, you know. But
I'll tell you a story I heard from Percy. I was with him 2 weeks ago, but I heard this years ago.
30 seconds, Jeffrey, before the break. Go ahead.
Well, basically, there was someone that admitted to have been bribed by Monsanto to lie on the stand in order to get some $20,000 worth of free chemicals from Monsanto. So he told Percy, because he was about to die from a fatal cancer and admitted it, came clean on it. So there was a lot of dirty tricks, and that's all alleged. I can't prove it, but that's the story that Percy shared with me, and it's on his website.
Okay, we're going to come back in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take final questions on GMOs with Jeffrey Smith right here on Coast to Coast AM. Well, we call our television program Beyond Belief. It truly is Beyond Belief. All kinds of great programs there for you, including, of course, Seeing Me Without My Mustache for 5 episodes, which have not come up yet, but they will. You can watch the program free for 10 days. Simply go to this website, beyondbelief.com, www.beyondbelief.com. Welcome back. Back with Jeffrey Smith, author of Genetic Roulette, Seeds of Deception, of course, the executive director of the Institute for Responsible Technology, as we talk about GMOs. Are studies ongoing, Jeffrey?
Well, there are studies going on, but not very many. There was a study done in Australia last year where they found that pigs that were fed genetically modified food ended up with inflamed and ulcerated stomachs, and uteruses were 25% heavier. The person was immediately attacked, is having trouble, you know, continuing research. There's some researchers in Moscow that found that by the third generation on genetically modified soy, most of the hamsters were sterile, 4 to 5 times the rate of infant mortality, and many had birth defects of hair growing in their mouths. We haven't seen a publication of that study yet. So there's not a lot of research on GMOs. There's much more research these days coming out on Roundup, and that's really implicating it for a lot of problems. And then something comes out on Roundup very, very often. It's not the simple, safe chemical that Monsanto made it out to be, and unfortunately, it's been treated as if it has been. And it's been described by some scientists as probably the most chronically toxic chemical on the planet right now.
Do you think you have ever eaten a GMO food accidentally or otherwise?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely have. And when I do, as I say to other people, I say, don't worry about it. Because worrying is toxic. The GMOs are probably toxic. Then you don't want two toxins. So you just got to do with what you do. In fact, people have to create a strategy. They go out to eat. They don't know what kind of cooking oil it is. It could be canola or soy. They may eat genetically engineered foods without even seeing them. So people need to sort of take the precautions that they can live with and learn what they can. We know that when people watch the film Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives, they become more vigilant at avoiding GMOs. And that's at geneticroulettemovie.com. We've done pre- and post-tests for people before they watch the movie Genetic Roulette and after they watch the movie, and they are always more vigilant at avoiding. But a lot of people can't really say that they're going to be 100% because they're not always in control of what they're eating. So I say, do your best, don't feel bad about it, but as you switch to non-GMOs, take notes, because you might notice that you're feeling better, have more energy, and some of the chronic issues might fall away.
Let's go to San Francisco. Scott's turn on Coast to Coast. Scott, thanks for joining us. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello, George. Actually, I'm in San Luis Obispo, California.
Okay.
That's okay. Hello, George. Hello, Jeffrey. You know, at the first hour, I was just listening to you guys talk about honeybees. And I have two questions. The first one is, could you technically genetically modify bees since they're dying? It just seems like, you know, would there be an answer to that? And the second question is, would there be any animal, bug, amphibian, or sea animal, or anything that you could genetically modify that would benefit also? For example, if they're not in the food, but they help the process to make the food, would there be anything you could think of to come to mind? You know, you've heard of in China that they're experimenting pollinating the flowers over in China, you know, with humans, without the bees. And I imagine maybe down in the future they might have some type of mechanical robot to be able to do that. But I was just thinking about it, and I just wanted to hear your two cents on it.
Those are good questions. I mean, in theory, if we really understood the DNA and we really understood the implications of changing it and all the possible damage that can occur and the side effects and the interactions of those organisms in a myriad of situations and all the climate and disease situations, and we really had that down, we could possibly go ahead boldly and safely genetically engineer something that's outdoors that will self-replicate and be in our gene pool forever. But instead, what we have is an immature technology based on obsolete assumptions that's full of side effects. Now, so what we're talking about is a science fiction type future where maybe you can genetically engineer sea animals or bees, etc., safely. But right now, the technique is prone to side effects. In fact, the reason I got involved in this is because I went into a lecture by a genetic engineer who was blowing the whistle on the technology, saying it's not ready to release outdoors, it's not ready for the food or any type of living organism because of this trait. Now, it turns out that the bees are suffering, according to many, from neonicotinoid insecticides that are coated on seeds, often the genetically engineered corn seeds that are planted around the United States. We're going to release another film, and if you want to see it, go to responsibletechnology.org and sign up for the newsletter. We'll be releasing an interview with Dr. Don Huber from Purdue University, Professor Emeritus, describing how Roundup may be also responsible for the colony collapse disorder, and it may explain why Monsanto bought a company that was doing research in colony collapse disorder called Biologics.
Huh.
They may have bought that company in order to prevent the research on Roundup and its link to colony collapse disorder from surfacing. So the answer about the bees is the same about the sea animals. Maybe in the future, definitely not now.
Let's go to Joe, Waverly, New York, east of the Rockies. Joseph, you're up with us.
Okay, thanks, George.
Okay, Joe.
My friend was talking about leaky guts syndrome that you can experience when you eat genetically modified corn. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, I'm happy to. In fact, I want to remind listeners, I have a whole talk on GMOs as part of the bonus, for the Coast to Coast listeners at responsibletechnology.org/China. And I talk about this, and I'll mention it briefly now about leaky gut. Leaky gut is linked to GMOs in two ways. First of all, leaky gut means holes in your intestinal walls. The BT toxin that is produced from corn is designed to poke holes in the stomachs of insects to kill them. That's how it kills insects. It's built into corn. The corn becomes an insecticide. It wasn't supposed to impact human cells, but a 2012 study by French researchers Cerellini and others found that it does, in fact, poke holes in human cells. So if we're eating genetically engineered corn chips, for example, or corn on the cob from Monsanto, we may end up with holes poked along our digestive tract, which might lead to inflammation, irritable bowel, inflammatory bowel, etc. Now, with Roundup, Roundup is used on 85% or 80% of the crops that are genetically engineered. Roundup is an antibiotic, and it kills the beneficial gut bacteria, but not the nasty stuff like Salmonella, botulism, and E. coli. So it can potentially cause an overgrowth of the negative gut bacteria, and that in itself can produce something called zonulin, and zonulin can cause the cells that along the intestinal walls to separate. So that's another form of leaky gut, the holes between the cells. Now, if you have holes in your digestive tract, it means the chemicals in the stomach and the bacteria in the stomach can get into the blood, and that's bad, but also the undigested food proteins can end up in the bloodstream. Now, the immune system will attack these food proteins because they're not used to seeing such large molecules, etc., because they're supposed to be much smaller by the time they get in there. And all the immune system, they pull out their iPhones and they take pictures of the proteins and they put it on their own Facebook and they say, attack anything that looks like that. But because the pictures are fuzzy, they look like other aspects of the body. It's called molecular mimicry, where all of a sudden the immune system looks at their own Facebook and says, oh my God, it looks like the thyroid and it attacks the thyroid, or it looks like the pancreas, it attacks the pancreas or part of the intestines. That's called autoimmune disease, where the immune system starts to attack the body itself. And one of the big correlations with autoimmune disease is leaky gut, allowing these undigested food proteins to get into the blood to give the wrong programming to our immune system. And so I was just talking to a doctor this evening who talked about leaky gut and GMOs, and she's convinced that GMOs are a major cause of leaky gut, as are physicians and nutritionists all over the world. Thousands of doctors are prescribing non-GMO diets, and many of them are experts at leaky gut and use that as one of the tools to try and heal the gut.
What was the reaction to your books, Genetic Roulette and Seeds of Deception, when they came out?
Seeds of Deception it came out in 2003. In fact, we launched it together 2 weeks after it opened, on September 16th that year, on Coast to Coast for 3 hours. It was the world's best-selling book on GMOs then, and it is now. It still is for 11 years. In fact, it keeps getting released in new countries. It's a national bestseller in Taiwan right now, and it blows the lid off of this whole myth that GMOs are safe and were promoted properly. And it's written as a storybook, real stories, but stories so that people who aren't interested in science can learn about the scientist who was fired and stripped of responsibilities and gagged and how his gag order was lifted and the whole thing. So it engages people. And as I gave Seeds of Deception to so many politicians around the world, I realized they're not going to read it. They need to be able to see just the facts because they don't have any time. But their staff needs to have the deep understanding of the science. And so I wrote Genetic Roulette, the documented health risks of genetically engineered foods, with the help of more than 30 scientists around the world, summarizing the health dangers. And it's done in a way that the left page on a two-page spread is just the summary and the right side are the details. So the left side is for the attention deficit politician, and the right side is for those that want to know the details. So that turned out to be used all over the world by those who were, it's been used in PhD programs and chiropractic colleges and medical schools, etc. And it's been adopted as kind of a Bible of GMO health risks. Now there's it's a little bit out of date in terms of being a compilation of the science, but it still holds true, and the other side has been freaking out about it because it exposes the poor research that they've done, and they've tried to use a junk science site to say that my book is all wrong, but they end up dusting off the same old false premises that we actually expose in the book.
All right, let's go to Jeff now in Agoura Hills, California, first-time caller. Thanks for holding, Jeff. Go ahead.
My pleasure. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to say that most of this seems to be done by activists, and it's people who want to live in a utopia, and yet we have, there's always a backlash to any time we ban something. It happened with Rachel Carson's campaign on DDT. We ended up losing a lot of people because of that ban. That was the best thing out at the time. Science is constantly changing. I think scientists are out there trying to do their best for mankind, not their worst for mankind. I don't imagine a company like Monsanto, as successful as it's been, is trying to kill off its customer base.
Not intentionally, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, not intentionally, but I would think that the science behind what they're doing, if there was any actual science to prove that they were killing off their customer base, that they would change that. But like I say, a lot of what's coming seems to be, the information that we're getting seems to be word of mouth. People that you've spoken to that have stopped using genetically modified foods and had better reactions. That's not actual science. That's actual opinions. It's like the guy who lost weight because he went on a certain diet, and now he recommends that to everybody. But as we all know, it's more than one thing that makes us lose weight. It's a combination of things, even though we might blame it on one thing. But I mean, we're telling countries where we have people starving to death and eating mud. We're frightening them into not accepting genetically modified food, and people are starving to death.
But could we feed them without the GMO foods?
Very possibly, and I think science, if it could do that, I think it absolutely would. And I think it's headed in the right direction. But science is not perfect. We have made many mistakes along the way. There was a time where doctors would tell you that smoking cigarettes was one of the healthiest things you could do for yourself. And it would calm your nerves. And we learned, through science that this was different. And I think if people, I'm a believer that if you build a better mousetrap, that people will rush to that mousetrap and they will buy it.
Let's get Jeffrey's reaction, Jeff, because we're coming up to the clock here. And Jeff, and
yes,
also,
go ahead. I want to recommend to Jeff that you go to responsibletechnology.org/China. And look at the presentation that I give summarizing the delegation of 30 people that were in Beijing in July. And you will find not activists, well, there's a few, but you'll find a whole level of science and scientists with peer-reviewed published studies and a lot of firepower in academic circles and research. It turns out that if you look at the balance of the research, it's on our side. We look at the science in great detail, the peer-reviewed published studies, etc., and we can see clearly that the technology is not ready for prime time. But you can also look at the actual quotes on our website at responsibletechnology.org from the FDA scientists that were made public because of a lawsuit. They agreed with us. They said that GMOs were different and dangerous, that they should be very, very carefully tested, long-term animal studies, human studies, because they could create allergies, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems, and they were ignored. The person in charge of policy at the FDA ignored the consensus among the scientists and lied in the policy, saying that the agency wasn't aware of any information showing that GMOs were different, and therefore no testing was necessary. The person in charge of policy was Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former attorney, later Monsanto's vice president, now the U.S. food safety czar, back at the FDA under the Obama administration. As far as Monsanto goes, we know they have a history of actually covering up the toxicity of their former products and chemicals, and this is well documented. They were fined $700 million for poisoning the people of Anniston, Alabama, and the documents were made public showing that they knew that there was health impacts of their PCBs and the factory that was producing it in Anniston, and they were keeping that information hidden. They were charged by Kate Jenkins of the EPA for hiding information and changing research that hid the information about the fact that Agent Orange, produced by them, caused dramatic problems in the servicemen in Vietnam. And because they switched the figures in their studies, it disallowed those servicemen from getting compensation by the government. They've been voted every year as the most hated company on the planet, and I think we have the evidence demonstrating that their intentions have not always been positive. They can't be trusted, and yet they are being handed the keys to the kingdom because, according to FDA policy, they're in charge of determining if the foods are safe. They have no need to do any research or even show anything to the FDA if they don't want to.
Let's go to Jan in Brooklyn, New York. Get you in here real fast. Jan, go ahead. Jan? Caught Jan. She fell asleep. That happens, Jeffrey. Hey, let's just chat. We've got so many people calling, but we're going to have the clock fall. If people want to track you, follow you, what do they do? Where do they go?
Well, I would say the first thing is to sign up for our newsletter and at responsibletechnology.org, because we keep people informed that way. And I explain where I'm going when it's appropriate, when I've got a lot of things going on. And sometimes I hide where I'm going. I'm leaving for a few days to an undisclosed country for a few days there because I don't want the biotech industry to track and try and sabotage my meetings, etc. But we also have a Facebook page. It's the Institute for Responsible Technology. We have a Facebook page, and we do some tweeting as well. So the main thing is the subscription at responsibletechnology.org.
All right. Thank you, Jeffrey. Keep in touch with us, will you?
Thank you so much, George.
Jeffrey Smith, Genetic Roulette, Seeds of Deception. Up next on Coast to Coast AM, David Zurita is going to join us as we're going to talk about solar UFOs, invisible UFOs that he claims are out there. It's a fascinating story that you get just here on Coast to Coast AM.